everybody. Welcome to this episode of Scholarly Peers. I'm your host, Sim Wong Chong, and I'm very happy to continue our second season in which I will interview experienced and senior academics about their experiences in journal peer review. In this particular episode, I'm very glad to have Associate Professor Rita Silver here with us. Thank you, Rita, for accepting my invitation.
Thank you for inviting me.
Should we start by having you briefly introduce yourself and maybe your tell us a little bit about your experience in journal peer review?
Sure. Well, I'm an associate professor of English language and literature at the National Institute of Education, Nanyang Technological University in Singapore, which we call NIE. And I my work is mostly in English language and literature, applied linguistics, teaching courses in research methods, classroom discourse, language literacy, etc. Now a lot of my work is actually administration. I administer some education research grants with funds that we get from the Ministry of Education. I also work as the research integrity officer at NIE, so I do a lot of work on IRB applications, mentoring people on research ethics, helping with authorship disputes and publications, things like that. So I think, to me, all of this really comes together under the broad umbrella of educational linguistics, and I think that's where I would also position the journal that I edit, which is Language and Education. This journal actually is somewhat unique, or at least it was in its start. It was started back in 1987 by David Corson and Viv Edwards, and they wrote an editorial in the first issue where they talk about the fact that a lot of the people that they knew, applied linguists, were doing work that linked language literacy education and didn't necessarily have a good place to publish it because journals tended to be very discipline specific. And they wanted something that was intentionally more multidisciplinary. It was a little bit hard, I think, to convince the publisher to take it on. But now, of course, I think that is not so surprising to see that sort of overlap and multidisciplinarity. So I feel quite proud to be involved with a journal that has that history. Just a little bit more about other things in my background. I actually started in journal publishing as a book review editor for the Language Teacher, which was a Japan Association of Language Teaching journal back in the day, shall we say. But it was a great training ground because at that time, the Japan Association of Language Teachers was new, that sort of publication that tried to combine research that was accessible to teachers was fairly new. And it was a great experience. In graduate school, I edited our working papers in educational linguistics. I work on editorial boards for three other journals that are related to educational linguistics, language policy, educational linguistics, Journal of Immersion and Content-Based Language Learning. I also work on TESOL EJ and TESOL Journal. So it's pretty broad base of journals that I've been involved in over time. But actually, when I was thinking about this before this interview, I hadn't really thought about it that much. But I guess that aspect of editing and academic publishing, not just the writing, but actually being involved in the publishing process has really been a part of my scholarly background and my academic life since really from day one.
Thank you. Obviously, you have a lot of experience, not only as a journal editor, but also as a peer reviewer, as an editorial board member, and an author. So we're going to unpack those experiences one by one. So why don't we start by your experience as an author? I remember in your talk that you gave earlier for Biro, you talked about the identities, your identity as an author and a journal editor going hand in hand. So I wonder if you can share with us some of your unforgettable peer review experiences as an author, and I'll leave it up to you to interpret the word unforgettable or memorable.
Well, I think when we think about unforgettable peer reviews, we almost all think about the bad ones, and there's no doubt that there are bad ones, that we all have bad ones. There are the reviews that you get where you think, did this person even read my article? And I think for me as an author, actually, the bad experiences are less about what the reviewer writes, but I have had experiences where I felt the editor was not helpful. So for example, if I had two reviews that said very different things, and the editor said helpful comments like, please address the reviews, then as an author, I could feel quite lost and not know what direction to take. So I find that to be even harsh reviews, you give yourself a day, you take a breath, you go for a walk, you can get over it. But I do find that the best experiences with peer review have been when the editor helps me interpret what it is that the reviewers are talking about. And I think early in my career, one of my colleagues said, whenever I get the peer reviews back, the first thing I think is, they just didn't understand. The second day I think, well, maybe I can change that. And the third day I think, you know, this actually might improve it. And so I try to remember that as an author, the reviews that I get, to really take them seriously and think about, you know, to what extent can it really improve what I'm working on? Because obviously somebody somewhere had a different perspective than I had. So I feel it's my responsibility as an author to try to consider what, you know, if it looks like they didn't understand me, why didn't they understand me? So I find it very helpful to take that perspective on the peer review process.
Right. I think it's very interesting you mentioned not only to decipher the message of the feedback, but also the intention of the feedback. You know, the reviewers take the time and they don't take the time to attack you personally. I mean, most people don't anyway. But, you know, looking at what's useful in the comments and trying to make the best out of it, I think that's very helpful. And also humbling. I mean, as a senior academic like yourself, you still struggle with the experiences sometimes. I mean, there's always a learning curve.
Absolutely.
There. So let's turn to your identities as a peer reviewer and, of course, as a journal editor. I wonder if you have any unforgettable experiences to share.
Well, I think as a peer reviewer, I feel like my perspective has really changed over time. I think when I initially did peer reviews, perhaps it was very focused on methodology, which is not surprising. I think when you first come out of graduate school, that we tend to be steeped in methodology as part of graduate school. But now as a peer reviewer, well, one thing I sometimes wonder, why did the editor ask me to do this? And if I really feel that my expertise is not relevant, I won't review it because I'm not sure I can offer anything helpful. But then if I take it on, I do really try to think about what would be helpful for this author, what would improve this article. Because in the end, really, that's what it's all about. It's all about putting out high quality research that leads the field forward, that resonates with research, that helps us better understand what we're investigating. So now as a peer reviewer myself, I think of it more as a conversation. What can I tell this? Like if this were one of my colleagues and I'm sitting down looking at the article together, what would I tell them that might help to actually improve this article? I think my other experience as a peer reviewer is never do it when I'm already tired and grouchy. That's just a really bad idea. But I think the other thing as a peer reviewer that's been interesting is sometimes you see some really new, fresh, exciting article and you just like, hurry up and publish this because I want to use it in my class next week. Mm-hmm. You know? So there's the whole spectrum that happens there as a peer reviewer when you get to see the article that people have just submitted.
I wonder as a journal editor and also, of course, you oversee the whole peer review process. I wonder if that has anything to do with your changing perspective as a peer reviewer, you know, more like a dialogue and how you can support colleagues rather than, you know, picking on little things that, you know, maybe not the best or not the way you want it to be.
Oh, definitely. I think my work as an editor has definitely influenced my perspective, for one thing, because I see so many more reviews, whereas before I might only see the reviews for my own articles. And there's no doubt that there's a lot of variety. There's the reviews that come back that say almost nothing, and you wonder, like, why did they bother? And then there are the reviews that come back that are just incredibly generous in terms of people sharing their expertise, obviously taking a long time to write comments, including useful references. It's really quite amazing. So I think one of the things about being the editor is just having the chance to see so many more reviews and so many different reviews. I'm sure you're aware of now, you know, there's a sort of a movement, I think, for people to share reviews more and to make the reviews themselves published. I think as an editor, I have quite mixed feelings about that. But at the same time, I realize it's quite an advantage to see what other reviews look like.
You talked about, as an author, you really appreciated when the editor would kind of highlight what you need to address in relation to conflicting comments, for example. I wonder, in your role as a journal editor, how do you mediate the whole peer review process? You know, do you read the comments and then just send the comments to the authors, or would you like add some of your own interpretations there, or does it depend on situations?
When I get the reviews, the first thing I do is I read all the reviews and I reread the article. And one of the things that's on my mind is, does this review make sense to me? Do the comments make sense to me? Do I think that this is something that would improve the article, be helpful to the author? Do I think it's too harsh? Do I think it's too lenient? So I think about all of those things. And I wouldn't want to say always, but I do try to always add a comment for the author about what I think about the reviews. And so I might say something like, I think the reviewer's two comments are very detailed, and they might seem a bit harsh, but I think you'll find them very helpful if you deal with them one by one. Or I might say, I know that reviewer one said that this article is ready to publish, but I think if you make these revisions, it will really make a difference. So, I mean, I don't really know if authors like that or don't like that, but I suppose I do always kind of interject myself into that process and try to help authors interpret what the reviewers are saying.
Yeah, I'm sure authors would appreciate that, because I think it's really giving them a steer to what's more important from the perspective editor. Or I think it's especially helpful when the comments contradict each other, and as you shared in your experience. The next question, I would like to take us back maybe to the beginning of your academic career, or maybe even your PhD, when you were a PhD student. I wonder how did you learn to navigate the peer review process? I mean, from a PhD student to now an established academic, a journal editor, what took you from being a student to an expert in this field?
Well, honestly, it was really trial and error. Initially, I was totally flying blind. I did not know what I was doing. One of my early experiences actually was, I was working on an international project with one of my colleagues at NIE, and we decided to do a special issue for language policy back when it was a new journal, and Bernard Spolsky was the editor. And he was extremely helpful in helping me learn more about the editing process and about how to manage review. So I'm sure some of the ideas that I have about, for example, the editor sort of in helping to interpret comments came because he helped me do that for the journal that I was editing it, but it was quite early in my career. So that sort of mentorship is just so valuable. I think as a junior scholar, you have to be willing to show people your work, even your drafts or your article, before you submit it. And you have to be willing, I think, when you get the reviews back again, to go to a colleague and say, this is what I wrote. These are what the reviews are. You know, what do you think about this? What do I do with this? Because you don't really want to try to just do it all on your own at first. And I wouldn't recommend that path. I think really, you know, ask some people that you trust for their comments and see what they say. So I think that part is is just really helpful, that the conversation is between you and the editor and the reviewers, but you've got a wider community of colleagues that you can call on as well.
Right. I think a lot of the doctoral students, they may be thinking when they are ready to submit or when they're ready to have a manuscript out. And I think from experience, you never know when you're ready, and you will never be ready if you keep thinking. I wonder how do you help your students or your research assistants, you know, junior colleagues, to kind of break through that mindset of saying, when am I ready? Or how do you do that?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm the best person to ask that. I think I hold on to my own work too long. But again, referring to colleagues who helped me along in my career, one of my colleagues said 80%. If you feel it's, you know, you've told your story, you've done your editing, you think it's 80%, send it. Because that is part of the peer review process isn't just about whether your article is accepted or rejected, but getting some feedback and getting some comments. Mm. And I found that helpful, because certainly you never think something is completely done. So sometimes I remind myself, hey, it's 80%, send it off. So I don't mean to say that I would encourage people to submit things that they feel are not done or they haven't really told their story. But when you find yourself going back and fussing, probably it's time to let it go.
Right. I wonder, in your experience, of course, as an editor and peer reviewer and author, and of course, looking at your own PhD students, for example, what are some of the challenges that you face or you see other people face in the peer review process?
Well, one of the things that had happened when I was working with my graduate student on an article was we submitted an article, got back revise and resubmit, revised it and resubmitted it. And when it came back again, it was just a few more minor revisions. And so part of that was talking with my student about, you know, this is okay. It's okay to revise it twice or sometimes even three times. As long as they are still saying they are interested, keep working on it. So we did that. But when we got it back the next time, we had a completely different review. And it was back to a major revision and change all kinds of things that weren't even part of the original article. And of course, the graduate student at that point was very upset. I don't know what to do about this. I don't know how to handle this. You know, have we been wrong all along? Whereas as a more senior scholar, my thinking was, there's a problem with the process. And I looked at the journal and realized that there was a new editor that had come on board, and maybe the editor didn't quite have the experience that was needed. And so I wrote a letter to the, it was a set of editors. I wrote a letter back to the set of editors and said, these are the reviews we got. And now we are wondering what to do, because this third set of reviews is very different from what we got in the first place. And we feel we have already met. And sure enough, the comment that came back was, you know, someone hadn't really checked the background and hadn't checked the trajectory, etc. So I wouldn't recommend that to everyone. I mean, approaching the editor like that is pretty bold, honestly. But I think in terms of my working with my graduate student, it was very helpful for her to understand, you know, editors are human too. And the reviewers are human too. And you don't need to lose heart just because you get back a negative review.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's also, I think from my experience, because the original reviewer isn't available to review. And I think that's always unfair to the authors. I'm not saying that the reviewers have to take on the second round,
Absolutely. But
a new set of eyes always, you know, there are new areas to look at, new areas to address. So I think that may also be the case. But I think it's you're showing junior colleagues an example about how to handle different issues. I mean, not to be bold and blunt all the time, but I mean, you know, some of the solutions that they can take on as they progress later on. And I remember in your presentation for one of the webinars that you did for me, for research synthesis, I remember you had not only yourself, but also your colleagues together with you as part of a team. I know that's not journal peer review, but I mean, that's the kind of community, I think, you know, you're trying to give opportunities to junior colleagues at the same time supporting them. I think that's quite important. And that connects with the next question, actually, where I would like to ask you about the kind of supports that we can provide to early career researchers and doctoral students in the peer review process. And one of the topics that keep recurring in my conversation with the guests is whether we need more structured training in peer review. Because, you know, thinking about doctoral education, there are courses and supports and all sorts of things, right? Academic writing, writing retreat and everything. But surprisingly, not on peer review process. What we have is maybe one-off workshops or seminars. I wonder, what do you think about more structured support or training, or you would actually prefer something more, you know, like humane and, you know, more community-based?
Interesting question. I actually want to go back to that example you gave about the presentation that we did about research synthesis. So yeah, that is actually a team of junior scholars that I'm working with at NIE. And after we did that, our next conversation was, can we publish this? And where would we publish it? What kind of journal might publish this kind of work? And then looking at different journals to see what kinds of things different journals do, and then thinking about how we would restructure it as an article instead of a presentation, who would do which part of the work, what would be our deadlines. I hadn't thought about it till you raised it, but I think that's all part of that process of helping junior scholars understand how academic work happens, and then the peer review comes on down the line. When I think about that with reference to your question, I guess I'm very steeped in the perhaps old-fashioned mentorship model of academia. I mean, certainly now we have a lot of other tools that we can refer to, like your podcasts or all different kinds of tools that are presented online. A lot of libraries, university libraries, provide a lot of information now about academic publishing. So there are resources now that people can tap into. I'm not sure if something more structured about the peer review process would be helpful or not, because, I mean, I definitely think presentations like the one you did for Bear or this kind of a podcast are very helpful for providing people more information and more awareness. But it is also true to some extent that you can't learn how to handle peer review until you submit something, get the reviews back, and you have to do it. It's not something you can think about. It's something that is really a socialization process. So I don't know. I mean, certainly I would think it would be part of academic writing classes that we offer at universities for graduate students, but I don't know how much it actually is. So that's an interesting question.
Yeah, I was thinking about not so much about the, you know, from the perspective of an author, you know, addressing comments. I think that should take place when people receive comments and they discuss with supervisors. I think that would really help them. But thinking about, you know, early career researchers starting as peer reviewers, and it's the first time they get an invitation and they would like to write a report for the journal, for example, for your journal. And they wonder, I mean, very naturally, people will look for examples of a feedback or report. And it's quite hard, as you said, to find examples. And I wonder whether it's part of socialization, but at the same time, there are also basic elements. I'm not sure whether researchers need to know before they can become a reviewer. I mean, in terms of expertise, they may have the expertise, but, you know, giving feedback is not the same as having the expertise, because we're not just looking at the content of the feedback, but, you know, the way information is presented in the report. So I wonder, do you think there's something that needs to be done, or it's, you know, they would get it gradually?
I'm pretty sure there's not an absolute answer to
right,
that.
Of course. I mean,
there are some publisher websites that have more information than others about how to do a peer review, have templates for what to put into the peer review. And if you're interested in that kind of information, if you get invited to do a peer review and you're not sure, you're not restricted to what that specific journal tells you. So you can look at other journals and other publishers as well to see what they recommend. So I think that's one thing in terms of this issue. If you don't have an example or a model to follow when you write your first peer review, some things are pretty standard, of course. Quick summary of the article to show that you've read it. A few comments about what's good in it, because every article should have some good. And then some comments about what needs to be revised, which should be written as helpful comments and not just criticism. I mean, that stuff's pretty standard. I think anybody could figure that part out. But I saw an article recently, actually, that made me think of you, and now I'm not sure where it is. But one of the things, someone actually did a research study and found that peer reviewers are more comfortable if they have a template that they can use. That was one of the things that they talked about. So for me as a journal editor, that was interesting because my journal doesn't have a template. So now I'm thinking, oh gosh, should I have that? You know, would it be better to have that? So I guess in that sense, I don't know, we're all still evolving. We're all still learning, right, including me.
Right. That's true. That's true. You know, on the note of being a peer reviewer, I wonder if, you know, in the case of your journal, if a junior researcher is interested in reviewing for your journal, they may have published in your journal, they work in the same area or related area, what can they do to get your attention?
So there are a couple of things that people can do. I do sometimes have people write to me and offer to do peer reviews. And if people write and tell me the areas that they are interested in, and attaching a CV is very helpful, because otherwise I have to spend my time looking them up and find out who they are. If it is a junior scholar, even a late stage PhD student, I would usually then invite them as an extra reviewer. So we always have at least two reviewers as a minimum. So I would invite like three or four reviewers, so that I could see how their review meshes with others and give them that experience. The other thing is, especially for late-stage PhD students, can let their supervisor know that they would like to try this experience, because, of course, supervisors as more senior academics get very busy and often turn down opportunities to review. But if they know that they could do it with their graduate student, and there's also a training exercise for their graduate student, they might be more willing to take on that peer review. People can say to me as a supervisor, I want to involve my PhD student. And they have to let me know, because sharing articles before publication is confidential. But if the supervisor writes and asks me, can I share it with my graduate student? Can I do the review with my graduate student? And here's their name, here's their expertise. Then I can agree that the article can have that limited distribution, and the students can become engaged in the process. So that's really a great thing to do if you're still in graduate school or still working with your supervisor. Actually ask, you know, can we do can we review an article together so I can see what the peer review process is like?
Yeah, I think that's very good advice. Sometimes we're just afraid to ask, and we don't think people will say yes to our requests because we have never done that before. So I guess my last question to you, Rita, is, what advice you would give to early career researchers and doctoral students who are maybe thinking about submitting their first manuscript to a journal, and they have all those considerations, all the concerns that they have. What's your advice to them?
Well, my advice is really pretty much what every journal editor will say. First, make sure it's a journal that would publish the kind of work you're doing. So you want to look at the aims and scope. You want to see who's on the editorial board. Are these people you've heard of? Are they people whose work you would cite? Read the journal. If there's nothing in that journal that you would cite in the paper you're submitting, you might be in the wrong place, right? Look at the publishing guidelines in terms of the kind of information that you have to prepare. And I would also say, if it's your first time, the system for submitting journal articles online to me does not look complicated, but I recently talked to someone who'd done it for the first time and found it very confusing. So give yourself some time. You're not going to sit down and learn that submission system, like at Scholar One for us at Taylor & Francis, in 5 minutes. So give yourself some extra time to work through to try and understand what it's asking you for to get the information together. I think those would be the main things that I would think about.
I think it's interesting you brought up the issue about submission system, because I think nowadays publishers use different ones, and I know some publishers, they're migrating to a new system and it can be very, very confusing. And for example, in Taylor & Francis, I remember, you know, the interface that editors see, it's different from the author's interface now. So it's quite interesting. And I think navigating those technical aspects can be challenging sometimes. Right. So thank you so much, Rita, for sharing with us your experience. I've learned a lot, and I really like the way that you expressed your experiences. You know, you tell stories, and then you know people reflect on the stories. I really enjoyed that, and you practice what you say, and I in terms of how you present with your junior colleagues and everything. So thank you so much, Rita. I've learned a lot. For the listeners, I hope you will continue to stay tuned for our next episode. And if you would like to know more about journal peer review, we have a collated collection of resources on our website, scholarlypeers.com. So I hope you will tune in for the next one. Thank you.
Thank you.